there's something you want to lead with.
Why have I quit my job? Why have I, you know, bought a van? And why am I going to drive around the country? Well, I'm passionate about the idea that you need to be heard. And I want to stitch these stories together across the states. We're going to find the commonalities. And it's going to be really an amazing experience. And I look forward to you joining me on the job.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Mental Health Today. It's your host, Ken, and it's a beautiful Monday here in Las Vegas, Nevada, after a kind of a wicked weekend of weather. Running around this morning, changing hotels, had an interview this morning. Amazing human I met this morning. Great interview. Somebody working in the prison systems, doing some really good work. And, you know, in life, life does not give you second chances. But just now, Mark, my next guest and I, we had an amazing conversation for about 7 minutes, and none of you were even listening. It's because we weren't broadcasting it or recording it. So here we are. We're back after a beautiful 7 minute, as Mark and I were giggling before, with dress rehearsal, much like he approaches his work. And so we had a little dress rehearsal. Now here we are back. Mark O'Connell, welcome to Mental Health Today. Thanks for taking time out. Thanks for being a guest.
Thank you, Ken. Thanks so much.
Yeah, I love the second try when you're in there and you realize, oh, there's no why does it say scheduled and not live? Because there might be a funny reason. So as you saw in the introduction there, that was me about 18 months ago, or almost maybe 2 years ago, pontificating what I might find as a common thread amongst the people I interview with the JAR podcast. And it was mental health. So this podcast was born out of that idea, to find out what people are doing, what professionals are doing in the space of mental health. And the more I looked at it, the more fascinated I was about the size, the scope, the amount of people dedicated to it, and, you know, the sense of urgency that a lot of people have had. So I jumped in, started the JAR Foundation, and then quickly started this the Mental Health Today podcast, so I could learn a lot more. Mark, welcome to the show. Thanks for being a guest. And same question I had, we had set on a rehearsal. How did you get into the business?
Well, I consider myself to be, as you know now, a professional listener. I don't mind saying it again. I say it all the time. I live for it. I love listening to people. I've always loved listening to people. And when I was very, very young, I told people I was going to be a writer because I wanted to tell stories. And then I wanted to be an actor. And I went to school for acting. I went to graduate school for acting after college and acted for a while. And what I loved about acting was listening. I loved endlessly. I loved the rehearsal process more than anything else. I wanted to just dive in to someone's life and play with my scene partners and just endlessly listen to the possibilities. And ultimately, that's what being a psychotherapist is. You get to be in rehearsal with people endlessly. It's a luxurious kind of endless rehearsal process. So that's how I got into doing what I do.
Yeah, and we were talking before, you know, I think this idea of looking at it like acting, very clever, and especially people that, you know, a client can come in and sit in a safe, creative space.
That's right.
Because, you know, art and stage and everything in theater, it's creative space, right? And there's no judgment, really. It's an expression.
Absolutely.
So that's a really... You know, and as you mentioned before, one of the tough things for people coming into therapy, you would trust my therapist.
Yes.
I mean, I don't even talk to my family about this stuff. Now I'm going to talk to some stranger.
Yeah. Yeah. And it takes time. It takes time.
It's going to take time.
Yeah. And it ought to. It ought to take time. And it should be, you know, we could talk about so many angles on this, but certainly part of the mental health crisis is that it's not funded. It's not, we're fighting with insurance companies, and really the insurance companies really should support long-term therapy. They should just give people the opportunity to be seen and heard. That is the best mental health treatment, is just to be safe enough to truly be seen and heard. And it absolutely, people should be reimbursed for that through their healthcare coverage. But we could talk for days about that. But when people have that opportunity, then, like you said, I don't want to talk to there's the people in my life about this, my friends and my family. And, you know, in the beginning, that's what's familiar. So you kind of cast, speaking of acting, you kind of cast the therapist as those familiar people. And what they call transference. And that's part of the process as well, is figuring out how to transcend those old relationships. Stephen Stern is a psychoanalyst who calls them the repeated relationships, and then to find what he calls the needed relationship, which is just another way of saying, it was a beautiful way of saying, like, what, you know, people say it in a lot of different ways, but, you know, I think of it as just sort of, how do you find how do you find the character, how do you transcend the everyday self you have become through those old relationships and become like all of the possibilities of who you really can be.
Who you can be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. You said something in there before, which is quite interesting to me about the medical. This is one of the things, and I agree with you. This is probably going to be one of my big sticking points for a while till I figure out what the issue is, but it's the fact that a lot of mental health issues ultimately end up in the hospital as a medical condition.
Yeah.
You know, so why, it's just crazy to me that that healthcare companies aren't funding this.
Yes, it is crazy. It is
because it costs them twice as much.
It's the way we think about, part of it is the way we think about as a culture, how we think about mental health. Mm-hmm. We think of it in the medical model in terms. We think we're either sick or we're well. And really, it's we have to explode that paradigm. Mental health is simply being able to integrate all of who you are, to feel as alive.
It's your whole,
in your context. We're all born into context with our bodies and our families and where geography, culture, and all of those things. The integration of our full experience and figuring out how to do that and relate to other people, that's mental health. And that's why it's inevitably going to take time to allow each individual person to be recognized. And if we think of it that way, then of course you would fund long-term therapy. And of course, less people would be hospitalized, et cetera.
Yeah, it's just goofy to me, the amount of medical, I mean, every day the emergency room is filled with mental health patients suffering a physical ailment.
Yes. Yes.
Kind of how I would put it if I was in front of United Healthcare people. You know, that's the reality. You're paying for mental, why are you paying for mental health? You know, you're paying for it when it's manifesting or presenting itself in a crisis situation.
That's
and
right.
And that costs so much more money than dealing, you know, giving people some therapy or other tools. It doesn't have to be just talk. It could be all kinds of therapies that are available.
That's right.
Goofy though. I can't figure out the mental health people. I don't know. There must be, you know, follow the money. If it's a logical business, like if I can figure this out from this seat, they know it from their seat.
Yeah.
And then there's a financial reason that they're not doing it.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's all the systems. It's the power systems. It's capitalism. It's patriarchy. It's all the things that sort of pre-program us to care about winning. You know, we think of things in terms of winning versus losing, being sick, well or being sick, you know, being right or being wrong. And you see it in politics, you see it in our personal relationships, and you see it's very bad right now, all over the place.
Interesting.
But if we were to think in terms of the way actors think about scene work And you know, I think a lot of therapists actually do think in these terms, even though they don't necessarily use that language. Thinking about, you're not thinking about that sort of dichotomy. You're not thinking about black and white, binary.
Yes.
You're thinking about relating to another person. You're thinking about how can we both see and be seen and hear and be heard. That's it. Yeah. How? And how can we be in a process where that's possible?
Yeah, you're right. That is absolutely win and lose, man. It's like, it is who's going to pay, who's not going to pay, who wins, who loses. Yeah, this is it's tough. And I think on social media, this is one of the issues. And even just face-to-face people, the inability for people to handle differences of opinions. Mm-hmm. From a therapist's viewpoint, mm-hmm. what is going on with that? Why have we, because there's a word for it. There's an English word called discord.
Uh-huh.
It's literally the discussion of disagreements. It's discord. I mean, it's like musically, it comes back to, it's musical. Mm-hmm. You know, it's where we don't, you know, it's not the same, but it still makes music.
Why? That's right.
What's happened to society where, or how do we fix that? Where we can't listen to another opinion.
Exactly. The way I think about all of this is, and it's always been there. It's particularly bad right now. It's fear. And obviously, I mean, it's probably so many things, but obviously climate has so much to do with it. And there's inevitable fear. And the things that we tend to be afraid of as people, I think, of shame. We're afraid of feeling mm-hmm. ashamed. We're terrified of feeling guilt. We're terrified of feeling rejected. And and feeling loss, you know, those are the kinds of the how I think of some of the main themes of what we're afraid of, and especially shame, really, you know. And so I think a lot of what we're seeing publicly is, I'm not going to listen to you because I'm so afraid that if I submit to you, you're just going to, you know, I'm gonna have to be ashamed, and then you're gonna try to win, that argument, then I'm going to be seen as being wrong, you know. And there's no example or model of, wait a minute. I mean, we would say in the psychoanalysts would use the term submit versus surrender, because if you're surrendering to a process, almost like improv scene partners, actors saying, okay, you know, you say yes.
Surrender.
Yeah, you say yes and to your scene partner. It's sort of like, oh, okay, I wasn't going to go in that direction, but I can sort of meet you there and also stay on my own side, you know, as opposed to saying, no, I'm not going to go there. And what the reason we're kind of saying no is because we think there's no alternative, that if we try to say yes to the other person, they're just going to pummel us.
And close the door. Yeah.
Close the door. We're going to lose. We're going to feel ashamed. And especially on social media, it's the shame. It's the sort of like, I'm not the bad one. You are. I mean, I mean, 9 times out of 10, maybe 10 times out of 10, it comes down to that.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, it's an all or nothing game. Mm-hmm. And then people really do lose their brains and just act goofy. I was just listening to a motivational tape. I'm trying to remember the name of the podcast, but it's Something Minds. You know, Empowering Minds or something like this. Anyways, a gentleman, Jim Rohn, and Jim's this really, you know, kind of country style motivational speaker. And he just hit on a thing that was so powerful. He's talking about, you know, discussing, you know, going out and meeting people that think different than you, that believe different than you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying, so you can present your ideas. And your ideas can be attacked, and you can defend your idea. You can learn how to defend your ideas and be more confident in your beliefs, right? So you have to articulate. You have to be able to articulate what you believe, why you believe it. And then you have to be able to listen so you can find the hole in the other argument or find the support in your argument or may change your mind.
And he's like, you have to prioritize that. You would have to prioritize wanting to learn something new. And that's where it's the fear. It's those fears that I think that people are. I don't want to learn something new because I don't want to be pulled down into shame and loss and all of these things.
So silly.
It is silly, but I think of it this way too, is a lot of psychoanalysts talk about this too, which is recognition and like sort of Hegel's idea of we all want to be recognized, but the way we're going about it is kind of what I would call a substitute for recognition. you're just like, I'm going to win. I'm right. You're wrong. And the truth, what we don't accept and, or I guess sort of wrap our minds around is that we're not getting what we want, because that's not recognition. Forcing someone into submission is just not recognition. It just makes someone shut down, hate us, wait their turn to pummel us and get their chance to win. So I hear what you're saying about, yes, the incentive can be to refine your argument, but it only works if you do prioritize that last part you said of wanting to learn something. And yes, actually, what I would say is just coming to terms with the fact that all we want, anybody, is just to be recognized. And if we can accept that we can find a way to see and be seen and to hear and be heard, we can find it. We can find it.
Yeah, I think when he was given the speech, he brought the most obvious one up last. Like his technique is, to win the argument, it presents all their good reasons while everybody's going, yeah. It's like, just maybe you're going to find something new. You know, he's got this like
Southern accent. Yeah. Oh, I see.
But he's like, he brought it at the end, like, you know, like.
Oh, I see. Like, wake up.
He's kind of saying, hey, dummies, the real reason you do this is you're going to learn something, you know. The real reason you learn
it
is
not because you. I get it now. Yeah.
It's the articulation. If you know his speaking style, you'll like instantly get it. When you see the third one coming, you're like, why didn't he say that first? Oh, you know why he said that. And then the way he delivers you're like,
I see.
You know, he's got a very kind of a Barney Fife. Not a Barney Fife. What is the sheriff's name? I can't think of it. Anyway, he's got a very country kind of a soft approach.
Uh-huh,
it should kind of sneaks up on you.
Hazard?
Yeah, no, not Dukes of Hazzard. I was thinking of Mayberry. I can't even think
Mayberry.
Of Mayberry. Darn it. Can't think of the name of the guy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I get it now. Yeah, yeah.
He's got a great style.
We have to prioritize that, though, the learning part.
What have you seen? What's been the difference? What are clients coming to you, or how are they presenting differently now than before COVID? Now that we're through COVID now.
Yeah.
And so the effect, the fear porn and the hate your friend because he didn't get vaxxed or hate this guy, you know, that division and all that's over. And we're now dealing with that drive is gone. How is that manifesting, you know, as a post-society kind of a, are you seeing anything different?
Well, that's interesting. Honestly, I think just sort of like, unfortunately, just that hate in throughout the country. I mean, everybody's still feeling that in different forms. I mean, I think during COVID that was taking the form of vaccines and the controversial things about masks and one side or the other. But now
it was so good to just divide up. I mean, you could draw a line on any topic in that. And there was just, it was one side or the other. No middle ground.
I mean there's beautiful. Still a lot of that. There's still a lot of it, not about those issues necessarily, but there is a kind of hopelessness sometimes people feel, and a futility to, you know, to taking up space and sharing their perspectives because they're afraid of it's going to get shut down. And that and that trickles down into the micro, into families, into couples. You know, it's you. So I would say people are afraid. I see a lot of people afraid to take space and to say what they really mean. And I think what we need more of, and I think what a lot of therapists can help people with, is how to say what you mean. There's nothing threatening about saying what you mean. It's always, I say to couples in particular all the time, you can say anything. It's a question of how you say it.
That is so true, though.
Mm-hmm.
You can say anything. If you say it the right way, you can really communicate anything.
Yeah. If you're prioritizing connection, mutual recognition, if that's the priority, you can find a way to do it. And then that's so much of the work, like with families and couples, that's the work is then, and then you think, and then that's where acting can help, where you're thinking about, okay, so my intention is to connect to this person. Now, what are the challenges? What makes it hard to open up to this person? What, and I oh, our time is up. Yeah,
everything's happening. Oh, is everything that could go wrong was an alarm.
What was I saying?
Thanks about that. Sorry about that. Nothing will throw you off like the phone call.
Not at all. I would say intentions. So and that's where acting can really help. Is the actor always goes back to, okay, what's my intention? And when you sort of play the scene a little bit in rehearsal, then you can start to see what your instinctive intentions are. And you can say, oh, I can clarify those more. So with couples, you'll see people trying to win, trying to be right, trying to shame the other person. And then I point out to them, okay, if we thought like an actor, what would you be trying to do? What's your action verb? And they'd be like, oh, I see, to shut him down, to shame him, to what would that same text sound like if your intention was to invite him to understand you, et cetera, right?
That is actually a genius analogy. If you're on the stage and this is the direction you're going with the dialogue,
yeah.
What is the audience going to perceive?
Yeah. What's the audience going to perceive? What are you doing to your scene partner? How do you expect them to respond to you?
Yeah. 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 Because that's what the audience is going to be going. One of those, you know, one of those memes, right? It's going to be an absolute meme.
Right.
And that's what, when you say that message, that's what they feel. They're like, oh.
Right. And again, it's the intention. And so a lot of times when I sometimes, you know, line readings are a tricky thing because, you know, people hear it and they think, well, I don't want to say it like that. And you don't understand me or whatever.
Yeah,
but I do it sometimes just so that they can get a sense of, you can say the same exact words. And then sometimes, you know, but you can say it in such a way that invites connection. And so at first what they'll do is somebody will say, oh, so it's just, you just want me to speak more softly. I'm like, potentially, but not necessarily. It's not the technical things. What it is the intention. You can say it one acting teacher would say, you can be as big or as small as you want, as loud or as quiet, as long as you're specific and intentional. And so if you are really connected to the intention to connect, it doesn't matter how it's going to come out the right way, if that's your intention.
Oh, it's beautiful. If I insult him in a whisper, is that better?
A whisper could be better, but a whisper could also be like Miranda Priestly from Devil Wears Prada, where her intention is actually to humiliate the person, right?
Oh man, that's so funny. It's really, I love that analogy. That is really a great analogy. And I can see that that's super easy to carry into the home.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Without being too, I don't know, gotcha or whatever, call your partner out, right? To call your partner out and like, oh, you know, let's go back to Mark. What's your intention, honey? You know,
right. That's right. You
know, how am I supposed to, where's the scene going? Where are you taking us?
That's right. That's right. And you know, and repair has to be a part of that, because you're never going to do it perfectly. But if you know that repair is an option, then you can start over. I had another acting teacher who would just because the scene started badly doesn't mean it has to end badly. And the same is true for any couple's argument, right? It's like, oh, I know. Right. I can. It's like, I see what's happening. I'm shaming you. I know. Totally. Totally. Totally.
And I'm going, I'm circling my normal drain conversation, my normal techniques. Yeah.
Yep. Let me try it differently. I'll try it differently.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
And not just couples, right? You could do it on social media. You could do it with someone you're in a political argument with or whatever, you know, it's like with all the things we were talking about.
Absolutely. I think this idea, the fact that you can learn something getting into a discussion with somebody you don't necessarily agree with, even on spicy topics. what are you thinking about now? What do you work? You know, you're still a young guy.
I mean, thank you.
I mean, well, I'm an old dude, so it's easy for me to look and go like, you're a young guy. You know, you're at a great spot. And what are you thinking about next? I mean, what does your career look like? And, you know, what are you working on? You got a book?
Let's talk a little about that. Yeah.
What else do you want to talk about?
I do a lot of, I do workshops for therapists on this topic.
Oh, that's right. Tell us about that. Therapists need therapists?
Yeah. I have several, you know, in the next month, in the next year. So I teach workshops on basically using our instrument and using it like an actor would with intention and awareness. And I bring in the body a lot. We don't talk about the therapist's body at all. Like nobody does. So even somatic therapists are going to focus mostly on the client's body, which we should, but we don't really think as much as we should about the therapist's body in space and how that's affecting the scene and how we can really be actors and take responsibility for what we're bringing into the situation moment to moment. And so I really try to help people, you know, with all that I know about acting and how we can use that to be aware and intentional in our work. And I have my book, The Performing Art of Therapy, that kind of goes along with that, those ideas.
So cool. What do you mean by like the body, is it the therapist, the position of the body, orientation to the client or just the presence?
It could be. And all of the above, beginning with, I mean, I think a lot of therapists, I think we're so used to the idea of just giving all the attention to the client that we're used to being disembodied actually and thinking that that's the goal. And actually, I think that's why a lot of us get burned out. That's where burnout happens. But if you're thinking like an actor would, even when an actor is just listening to their scene partner, they are very alive. They have worked out that day. They have done yoga that day.
Yeah.
Right. They have prepared their entire instrument to be present with the scene partner because listening, of course, is not about negating yourself. It's about being right there with the scene partner. You're an active participant, even if you're not speaking. And so it's a lot. Yeah. So it's first and foremost just recognizing sort of what's happening and then thinking about, okay, well, and then how can I maybe use my body with more intention or just being aware of how I'm feeling, how I'm affected.
Huge. All huge. I was just a guest at an equine therapy weekend.
Oh, wow.
So I went to a ranch and hung out with horses and donkeys and mules and humans.
Yeah.
And I was able to get into a round pen with a donkey, close my eyes, and connect with the animal and bring them to me.
Wow.
Just by asking them to walk to me. It is amazing. But, you know, the most important part about the whole training for this, the beginning of this, the first day, was congruence.
Yep.
Between your heart and your breath.
That's exactly right. Yep.
And you can't get near the dog. You can't, she sees you. As soon as you get close to the pen, and it's a big pen, you're in their environmental space. They have huge brains and huge electrical systems. They feel you.
Yeah.
They can feel your energy. They know you're there. They're grazing, whatever, but they're watching. Ears are going. And when you get into a circle pen with them, you're absolutely in their electrical field.
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. Thank you for saying that. That is beautiful.
So your point about what you're talking about is just resonated with me. Like exactly.
Yep.
Your body as a therapist, you are emitting a field and you're going to make people nervous or warm or whatever by, you know, get your breath aligned. So this is the weirdest thing. Like you come up to a horse and if you're not congruent, they will be like,
yeah.
But if you are, you can come up to them. You can walk right up to you, hug them, touch them. They'll embrace you. So anyway, just to
no, not I, this should be huge. Part of therapy training. Meeting what you did with that donkey should be part of therapy training. Truly,
it truly. I mean, I gotta say, Mark, it was wild. It's Tammy Blakely, the Blakely Ranch in Sonoyta, Arizona. Just an amazing human. I mean, she's a triple threat. She's technically very good at her coaching work.
Mm-hmm.
She's a badass cowgirl, and she's got a gift, wow. a gift for sensing and seeing and feeling energies around people and calling energies to places. So it's an amazing experience, but really to what you said is the space a therapist creates.
Absolutely. Well, that's why I think therapists really should be able to do that. We should take that response. We really need to be that responsible when we are engaging a human being.
And that's what Tammy was saying, is this works on every living being there is, you know, babies. She's babies. Like, try it when you're around a baby next.
Right. It'll well, learn. And the work that I really look to a lot is Beatrice Beebe, who's a psychologist. You know her work?
I know.
Decades of work, her microanalysis work with parents and infants and their implicit communication, their nonverbal communication. And then she also is a psychoanalyst. So she does make the connection to working with adults and individuals in the psychoanalytic situation. But we should all think more about that. I reference her work all the time in my workshops. Which is very similar to what you're talking about with the monkey and the horses. It's and so with babies, yes, you can see just how every just being present is so important because you're doing something. You're doing something and it's affecting your seen partner, whether you know it or not.
And that's the funny thing. I was truly shocked at how real it was. And, you know, this is the second day she handed me the donkey was the one that I was working with was a little bit of a, I don't know. It was like she was just the boss of the whole kind of farm thing. And so she would go, she learned how to crawl between gates. So she just had free rein. And so, you know, Tammy handed me the reins and said, go get her and bring her to the pen. She didn't let anybody go get their animal. And I'm like, okay. So I had to go, you know, it was a good 50 yards and I'm kind of huffing over there and I'm like, I get this on. I'm a very business kind of person. I got the reins. I got a whole, you know, I got a donkey and go put the down and we'll get back in the pen and we'll do our business.
Right.
I got about 10 feet away from the donkey and it knew I was coming. It could see me. And it just looked at me and just went and just backed up. Like, you need to get your stuff together, son. And I kind of stopped in my tracks and I'm like,
wow.
And I just started doing a few breaths to kind of get my heart and my brain and my heart and breath aligned, really.
Yeah.
And as soon as I did that, I could see her body just kind of go. And I went up and I put it right on her. She just let me, stranger, I only knew her 2 days, let a total stranger put a bridle on her and walk her.
Oh my God. That's everything. That what you just
magic.
Said, everything.
Magic. But boy, the human, it just makes sense to me now. Why do babies just sometimes babies look at people and they're like, ah,
yeah. You know, like, oh yeah. They're like same thing. When we go back to what I'm saying about acting in therapy, having the same goal, it's just to invite your teen partner to be alive. And you have to ask, well, are you inviting that baby? Yeah. You know,
inviting the baby?
Is the baby feeling a truly an invitation? And who knows what's happening with them? We're all so different. So you have to tune into what does this person need? This person may feel shut down. They might have aural sensitivities. I mean, who knows what the reasons are that you're too much for them, but you repair and then try to be intentional, make the next move better, more effective.
That's kind of what I did. I repaired myself. I had I totally did your technique. I had to like stop and go, oh, I'm totally wound up, man. Like a firecracker. That's of course, donkey's not going to let me near her.
Well, you know, I'm so appreciative that you told that story, because what I'm, what I talk about, I like to think of, is not even technique. I think of it. So I think of it more just that it's an, or it's an intuitive, organic process about, you know, connecting with other living beings.
No, it's real science.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's real science.
It is science, but there is an art to it, which is, if we, you know, and that's where acting, you know, can help be more conscious, I think, about the going through the steps and going through the motions of intentionality. Beginning with a sense of, like, as you did, of awareness. And yeah, and the scene partner, it's all listening. Your scene partner will always tell you what's happening with you and what they need from you. And your scene partner will give you everything that you need if you listen to them.
Sound like Tammy, say the horse with the equine will give you everything you need to know about yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
By listening.
By listening, and what they need you to be for them. How you can really work together, see and be seen. And you know, children do. I mean, I have a 5-year-old boy, and you know, and I have to learn the lesson again and again and again that you know, he is my guide. You know, I have to tune in better and better and better. He will tell me, you know, what he needs, you know. And I'm I have just a quick story about his birthday party, for example. His fifth birthday party, he wanted part of it to be at the house, and people started showing up, and he immediately ran to his room. And of course, as a parent, you get embarrassed, and what you want to, you know, speaking of shame, you want to be old school and be sort of like, get down here and be polite.
Yeah.
Of course I didn't do that. I, you know, I read the blogs, I read all the books on, you know, that's supposed to.
So, I know a therapist or two.
Right. Exactly. But it's hard. It's hard, you know, so I went up to his room. It was hard to do, but I followed his lead. He wanted to read a few stories while the guests were downstairs, and I did it. But what was happening is, you know, his nervous system was calming down. He was breathing. He was preparing for the scene. And then, you know, he went down, and guess what? He was improvisational. He was having fun. But he, you know, he knew what he needed to be part, to participate. And we have to give that grace to our scene partners, really, whoever they are.
Yeah, and not go up there and be angry at him and shout at him and tell him he's got to get downstairs, right? Totally live and follow his lead, listen to him. And he's like, he's listening to his body.
He's listening to his body. And what if we gave that space to all of our scene partners, if we, you know, to the extent that we can.
sometimes, Mark, it's just, I just feel like I can't handle it.
But you can always continue it later. You always continue it later. Like, we'll come back to this. We'll come back to this.
Yeah.
It's too hot right now. But
yeah, I'm feeling a little bit spicy. Mark, awesome conversation. Tell us, maybe I've got up here now. I think I'll read this for everybody, but it's Mark O'Connell, therapist.com. And we can find your book there.
Yes, you can find it there.
A link there.
There's a link there. It's called the Performing Art of Therapy, or you could Google that title.
Yeah. Okay. Performing Art of Therapy, and then Mark O'Connell therapist.com. I love your approach. You'd be a great therapist to work with, I would imagine.
Your
style, very, very cool. Love it. And the way you set that as just framing that, if I was going in there as a couple or as a person, framing this as this kind of stage and theater does take it. It feels like it's less about me. Like, all of a sudden I'm not, you know, I'm going to go into this kind of rehearsal, and it's kind of, you've got a good environment you've set up, like this almost a fantasy environment where I can go and be myself and not be worried of shame or hurt or embarrassment, and get some acceptance. Yeah. I love that concept. Great, great concept. Killer.
Yeah. And we should, I mean, because we should, as people, just have the space to take risks, to try things. There's, you know, to figure out who we are. That's really what we need space for. We don't know who we are. It's not, you know, sometimes people think that psychotherapy is like archaeology, where you're just peeling back there it is. And it's not necessarily like that. You know, it's like, it's creating the conditions where potential is possible, really.
Yeah, and I like the fact it's coming ultimately from the person, right? I mean, it's ultimately the client is the one that is going to have the aha moment.
Yes, yes.
That's got to be magic for you. I mean, that's got to make everything.
Well, when I'm lucky enough, I mean, the thing is, you learn Winnicott said at the end of his life, he said, I wish I wasn't so attached to hearing, you know, how good a job I did, basically, you know, I wish I wasn't so attached to hear it, you know, the feedback.
Who's not attached to that? Come on.
Of course you need to know. And I love those moments, but when I think of practicing this art, I really think of accepting sort of what it's about is about this person feeling alive. And I hope I've invited them to feel that way. So, and I just, you know, leave it there.
I love that. Inviting them to feel alive. And that's magic. Mark, thanks so much for being a guest again, taking the time out.
Thank you so much. I loved this conversation.
Yeah, it was a great chat. And so two things out of this. One is I will shoot you the Tamley Blakely Ranch. You can look at her stuff.
Yeah.
If you ever get a chance, you know, out there, if you ever want to, you know, do something for yourself or take you and your spot partner out there. Great. Yeah. Great fun.
Yeah.
Great fun and great human. And she's starting some really interesting. I think she's got a good thing going out there. And then I forget there was one other thing in there that wanted something I wanted from you. Person, you know, somebody, you know,
Beatrice,
can't remember who to, not Beatrice. It was somebody else. Oh, I'll think of it. Something else. I'll close it out and then we'll come back. See you in 30 seconds.
Okay.
Thanks. Thank you so much. Thanks everybody for sure. Thanks for being a guest again, Mark. Thanks everybody for listening to Mental Health Today. Please share this episode. Just drop down whatever platform, your audio platform you're listening on, especially the audio folks, and do share. And if you're end up watching this live somewhere or end up watching it recorded on the TV version, thanks so much for sticking around till the end. Share, make some comments. I will see you in 30 seconds, as soon as I can figure out where my commercial is. Okay. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, loose, baby.
But we're about to go and make this vessel with these great professionals in public glass. We're not part of the community, but we're from the outer family of glass blowing. Yeah, we're going to go make a magical giant jar with optic lenses so that if you turn it, it changes all the time. So if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change.